Spring cleaning isn't just for your garage and basement. How about that sock drawer? With new drops of incredibly soft socks to go along with tees and underwear, Bombas is the brand you need for a spring refresh. The only thing I like more than the comfiness of Bombas is their amazing mission. One item purchased equals one donated. Get comfy this spring and give back with Bombas. Head over to bombas.com/hardthings and use code hardthings for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/hardthings and use code hardthings at checkout.
Hungry Root's standard is simple but important. Step one, it's got to taste good. Step two, it's got to be quick to make. And step three, it's got to contain whole, trusted ingredients. And those three sound simple in theory, but when there's the option for takeout and there are stressful work days where meal prep isn't a priority, and when you've got picky eaters in the family, God help us, it's easier said than done. But Hungry Root makes it possible. We just built our first personalized cart after taking the fun little intro quiz, and soon my fridge will be filled with dairy-free snacks and drinks for John and the kids, prepared heat-and-eat meals for the whole family, and other high-quality groceries they're shipping over. I can't wait. Right now, Hungry Root is offering We Can Do Hard Things listeners 40% off your first delivery and free veggies for life. Did they say free veggies for life? Just go to hungryroot.com/hardthings to get 40% off your first delivery and get your free veggies. That's hungryroot.com/hardthings. Don't forget to use our link so they know we sent you.
And I continue to believe that I'm the one for me.
Welcome to the first We Can Do Hard Things of 2022.
Whoa.
That's weird, right?
2022, what's up?
That just explains the difference in our personality.
I'm like, what? 2022? And sister's like, whoa, 2022. And Abby's like, hot damn, 2022.
Let's go.
I'm confused.
I just
sister's
want somebody,
sad. Yes. Abby's excited.
Of course.
Which means that it might be a new year, but we are the same us's. Okay. Let me tell you where we are right now. Abby and I are in our office / recording room / living room / Chase's bedroom when he's home from college. He is home now for his break. So what we do on podcast day is we just come in here and we step around all of his piles of clothes and books and we fold up the hide a bed couch to set up. And so we're in here now. This is my favorite room of the house. We have these glass doors so we can see out onto the street of our little LA beach town. And so as we record, we can see little families lugging their kids in gear to the beach, pretending to have a good time. And occasionally we can see a badass woman in a wetsuit carrying a surfboard, which always makes me so happy. But not today, because it's raining outside today, which is an anomaly in LA and is my favorite, because when I wake up and hear rain, it feels like the universe has handed me a get out of jail free card, mm-hmm. You know, because in LA, it's always freaking sunny, which is wonderful, I guess, but it's also annoying because when you think about it, the sun is really bossy. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? It's like
an indictment. If you're not out here enjoying the sun, look. It's you're wasting your life, not
exactly.
Taking advantage.
I mean, talking about a pretty bossy human being, you just don't like being bossed, do you?
No, I don't. I don't like being bossed, yeah. Especially by the sun, which just sits there in the sky, just shaming me for living my homebody, homosexual life. That's how I identify as a homosexual. I love my house. I would marry my home if I were not already married. It's the only identity I've ever had that has stayed constant.
You can't even figure out. All right.
Right. I don't know if I'm a homosexual. I just identify as queer, but I do know that I'm a homosexual. So, you know, it's just like when the sun doesn't come out and the rain comes, it's just an invitation to just stay snuggly and cozy. So it's a rainy, snuggly day and Abby and I are on the couch. Sister's in her son's bedroom. That's where she records. And in here, there's a little fire on and our lazy dogs are on the floor and we're talking to you. So far, 2022 is pretty good stuff. It works for me
so
far.
Give it a minute.
But give it a minute, she says. So the one thing that doesn't work for me that I want to start off with is this January can drive me a bit that shit. Okay. And it's because I've been thinking a lot about this and it's because of the way that January is branded. Okay. Mm-hmm. It is as if January has this PR agency that all sat around a table and decided that the way that we will brand January is to capitalize on how much people hate themselves. Right? By creating this tagline of New Year, New Me. Okay.
It's actually New Year, New You.
New Year, New You. New Year, New You. Okay. So, two reasons why this is stupid. All right. New Year, New You is stupid. Number one, it does suggest that all of us hate who we are and are just waiting for the right month to come so we can completely change our horrible, stupid ass. Hateful self.
It's so true. It's so insulting. It's so like, what insulting. If it was like New Year, new wife.
Yes.
New Year, new husband. As if like you'd take the first chance you got to throw them to the curb.
Exactly. New Year, new self. New Year, new you. You suck, in other words. So number one, it suggests we hate who we are. But number two, it goes against the way life is and mm-hmm. the way people are. Okay, this is not how life works, New Year, New Me. This mm-hmm. is not it. Okay, so what is fundamentally true about people that I have observed in my own life and with other people is that at our core, like at our deepest, truest self, we are unchanging forever. We are always the same self. Okay, like I have just recently accepted this, that there, I am not, never, no days in the future am I going to wake up and suddenly be an adult. Right? Like I just had this idea that there was myself, but at one point out there, I was going to wake up and I was going to be this future self that I had dreamed up, that had more things figured out, that was mm-hmm. like now, like everything's been a dress rehearsal, but at one point it's going to start.
Yeah, it's like a page loading, and then it gets stuck at 99% and will never fully load. That's how I feel That's about it. Life. Loading. Ah.
Loading forever. There is no future version of myself. Like this is it. Okay. And I don't mean like our identities stay the same. All right. That shit changes constantly. Like used to be straight. Now I'm gay. I'm married, divorced, single, non-mother, mother, woman. Those are just costumes, right? Those are just roles. I'm talking about like at our soul level. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm talking about at our consciousness level. Like what is actually you? What is actually me? What I really am. Mm-hmm. Like the me that is in here looking out at the world. Mm-hmm. This weirds me out. I actually just thought of this a few weeks ago. Okay. That the me that is in here looking out at the world was the same me that was in here looking out at the world when I was like 10 years old, like in the backseat of my van, looking out at the backs of my parents' heads. Same me inside that was looking out at the world, right? Same me that's been in here looking out that like was watching doctors deliver Chase. Like same me inside that was watching Abby say her vows. Like it will be the same me that is on my deathbed. Like, hopefully, if that's the way I go, like looking around at people who love me, right? Same inner self. And this is bad news for January branding, mm-hmm. right? Because the truth is forever, New Year, same ass me, okay? Mm-hmm. But I think it's good news because actually it makes me feel safe. I'm going to be okay forever because yeah. I'm never going to leave me. Mm. Like this self looking out from inside at everything is going to be the same self. It's like I also just began to understand yesterday that if I'm never switched into this different grown-up adult future version of myself, that means that nothing ever is going to be able to separate me from myself mm-hmm. till the day that I die, mm-hmm. which is very comforting yeah. and also yes. scary as shit. I'm stuck with this self forever. But
yeah, good news, bad news. Right. Good news, bad news, people.
Good news, bad news. So,
but it's beautiful.
It's kind of right. It's like weird. I don't know how, I don't know if I'm explaining it right, but it is weird to me that this inner self that's looking out at the world was the same when I was 5, 12, 25, 40, 60, like the same
But is it weird? Because I think in your brain, you're making it weird. Like the consciousness self is like, this is what I've been trying to teach you all along.
Right. That it's just the now. It's just the now.
It's just always here been you in the I have now. always been.
It's exactly like the sun being out all the time and making you feel like you should be doing something. Mm-hmm. We are here to say it is January. The sun is shining. Everyone is new year, new youing all over you.
Yes.
And you get to say, I am not going to accept that shame and expectation that I should be out running around in the sun. I'm not going to accept the job you've given me, which is to apparently throw my old self to the curb and and start fresh and new. That it's always just the next right thing, one thing at a time. And there's no radical promise of transformation, but there's also no radical assignment. Just keep doing the next thing.
There's no premise you have to accept that who you are wasn't good enough in the first place.
Yes.
Right?
It's a very insulting campaign now that you think about it.
Screw you, January PR people. Listen. Screw you.
It's a great way to run an economy.
Yes, exactly. Because it's really about
yes.
the PR for January is really just everybody on earth who's trying to sell you the shit that will certainly make you a new year, new you.
So, right? So it's new rule. New year, screw you.
Yes. Yes. Screw you, January, is my January vibe, okay? But what I will tell you is I do not think that you need to be better. I think you are perfect right now. But there is a cool thing, like when I think about this me self, this soul level self inside of me that's been with me forever and will be with me forever more. That one thing that has saved me at every point of my life, no matter what identities are changing or relationships are changing, is returning to that self over and over and over again, like a touch tree, right? Like a thing that I'm coming back to. And when I think about what the hell is that I'm talking about, that self, what I would describe it as is this like churning stillness inside of me. That's the best I can describe it right now, that it is a stillness, but it is a moving stillness inside of me that if I return to, it saves me. And so what I would say is let's have an episode today that's about not being better, but being still.
Mm.
And how can we use stillness to save us? I was thinking in prep for this little conversation with y'all about how I've kind of experienced life thus far to be three different parts. Okay. It's like, well, from when I got sober, because I don't know what the hell was before that. That was just
a prologue.
It was a very dicey prologue is what it was. Yeah. Bit of a tornado. But it feels like as an adult, there's this level one where you're just like becoming whoever the world told you who to be. You're just like, you look at the world and say, what is makes for a successful person? And then you just gather up those things as the best you can, right? Try to become like a good whatever, whatever your culture has decided, a good mother, a good wife, a good partner, a good worker, a good community, whatever. You build that way. And then you burn out from that and you wake up and you realize, you look at your life and you're like, what? This is not my beautiful life. You're like, what the hell? I did all the things they told me and either I crashed and burned or I just feel meh about all of it. Mm-hmm. So then you level up to this level two.
I love level up.
Level up, which is like, this time where you actually figure out who you are and what you desire and what your true feelings are and your true ambition and your true intuition and imagination. You create a self separate from what the world told you. I feel like that's what a lot of Untamed is about. creating this self, like, who am I? What are my feelings? What do I want? What are my boundaries? What are my values? And then you kind of figure out who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then, and you know that there's this part we're trying to enter into now, which is like this other level, which happens when you figure out you have created such a self that you cannot stand your damn self. Right? You've created so many boundaries that you can't stand anybody. Your values are so strong that you are kind of not able to see other. You've selfed yourself out. And then I feel like there's this third level, which is transcending the self.
Mm.
It's like that we watched that Ram Dass special recently that was like
so good.
You spend your whole life becoming somebody, but the actual goal is to become nobody.
It feels so counterproductive. You spend the whole first part of your life being somebody that you're not. Then you spend the next part of your life trying to find the person in the somebody that you are. And then you spend the rest of your life trying to become nobody.
Exactly.
To lose thyself, that which you just found.
Yeah. To become as wise as you were when you were born. And I don't think you really get from level one to level two, level three, and that it's like this permanent thing. I just feel like I'm always dipping in between all of it. Every single day I'm like finding myself becoming who the world wants me to be. And then finding my fire and being all, and then transcending. Like it's all every single day.
Studies of happiness and age find that people are least happy and least satisfied with their lives in their 20s, 30s, and early 40s. There is the worst satisfaction of life in midlife. And then you gain an appreciation for life as you age. It's crazy because notwithstanding ageism and sexism and this kind of archetype in the media of this miserable old woman, it's actually women are increasingly happy after age 55. So
wow.
They're just like have better well-being and lower levels of anxiety and stress. And actually women are consistently rank higher than men in life satisfaction as they grow older. The happiest people, period, are women aged 65 to 79. So even if none of this rings true, I think there is kind of a low grade process happening in us where either it's like we've learned from our life or we're learning because we're getting closer to death about what's important.
God, that's so hopeful to me. It's countercultural because the culture promises us that we are done as women after what? Like now it's probably 18. I don't know what
right.
the age is where they tell us we're worthless. And what I see in my life is what you're saying. Mm-hmm. That I want to look at most 20-year-olds, 30-year-olds and say, just honey, hold on. It gets mm-hmm. better. Mm-hmm. Like you stop when you finally figure out that, oh, I can't please everyone. It's the phenomenon of people saying I've run out of fucks to give.
Mm.
Like mm-hmm. that is, it's a joke, but it's not. It's mm-hmm. like this very deep letting go of, oh, I see the game here and I'm not going to play anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to please myself. The very thing that the world tells us we should fear, which is that the world will stop looking at you like an object, is probably what is freeing. Like when the world stops preying on you in a million different ways, not just for preying, like I'm not just talking about sexually and physically, although that is real, but for everything. The world just looks at women as objects to serve, to fix, so when you start to disappear in terms of the culture, that might be the first time you actually can exist inside your own skin.
Oh, it feels so exciting.
I know.
It is. It's like the great giving up. You know, that's what the I've run out of fucks is basically. When you can still strive to meet any kind of standard, it's the striving is keeping you miserable. When you're out of the game, and I'm saying from a cultural perspective, you're in pursuit of something else at that point. And I think that actually dovetails really well with you wanting to talk about stillness today, because stillness is a lot of a great giving up. It's,
right.
Yeah.
You know. Quick math, the less your business spends on operations and multiple systems, the more margin you have and the more of your hard-earned money you get to keep. But with higher expenses than ever on things like materials and distribution, everything just costs more. That's why smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. You'll reduce IT costs, you'll cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems, and you'll improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, and expenses don't slow down, so why should you?
By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/hardthings. netsuite.com/hardthings. That's netsuite.com/hardthings. When I think about those levels that I was just talking about, which I think sometimes correlate with age, often 20s and early 30s are this striving to be what the world tells us to be. And then we kind of find our own backbone and heart and soul in our mid 30s. And then we, you know, try that for a while. And then often people, like you're saying, around their 50s, let go of that identity too. And when I think about what is the, for me, what is the magic trick of the leveling up? Like, what is the teacher that has always been there to push me up a level? It's always been stillness in a million different, well, actually just a few ways. Getting still has been the greatest teacher of my life, just forcing myself. So I wanted to talk today about, well, I want to tell a story about stillness and how I first discovered its power. And I'm excited to talk about it because I haven't talked about it in so long and I don't know how it's going to feel now. I used to think it was so smart and now I'm, it was like such
revolutionary.
Oh my God.
10 years ago.
It was epiphany to me. So a long, long time ago, after I found out about the infidelity in my first marriage, you know, we've gotten to this place now with our family that all is well, but that was a horrifying, terrifying time for me. Mm-hmm. I really, you know, for those of you who haven't been with us since the early days, I was married for a decade and my then husband told me that he had been unfaithful to me pretty much our whole marriage. And I was deeply shaken and so afraid because I had no idea what to do. I had very little kids, and I could not see a solution. Like, I could not see staying with this person and living with that kind of pain and dishonesty and betrayal in my own home. And I could not see leaving because breaking up my family at that point felt like an impossibility to me. And so I was just in a slice of hell.
And that was your experience, because there's a lot of people out there that must leave.
Or must stay.
Or must stay.
Clearly. Right. I mean, I did both.
Right.
Right? I understand completely. But at that moment, I had no, you know, those moments where you just feel like frozen because this way is impossible and that way is impossible.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Like, I just couldn't. I spent all day just trying to make something make sense in my brain and in my heart, and nothing. There was nothing. And I was so furious. And then when you're a young person, you have children, you can't even deal with your own stuff because your kids are constantly there and you're trying to help them through. Anyway, I was in a rough place and I was going to therapy and explaining a lot of my rage and pain, and my therapist recommended that I go to yoga. Okay. And I was like, no, that's not going to happen. I did not have a lot of woo-woo back then.
I know. I can't believe there was ever a time where you didn't have woo-woo. It's so wild to think about it.
Yeah. I mean, now I'm just woo-wooed out.
5 incense burnings a day, candles lit. We are a fire hazard. literally.
I know. It's just, the smells are so, well, we always talk about that, but it makes me feel like there's more magic when the incense is going. Anyway.
Whatever floats your boat.
Yes.
Sweetheart.
Thank you, love. So, so I said no, but then there's this one morning where I'll never forget it. The kids were at the kitchen table. I was at the counter in the kitchen and my ex-husband walked over to me and tried to put his hand on my arm and I yanked my arm away just like really, really hard. And I looked over and the kids were watching the whole thing. And I remember one of them going, "Mommy, what's wrong?" And I was just like, "Nothing. Everything's fine. Everything's fine. Fine, 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 fine." And I like sat, grabbed them. And I just thought, oh, this is, we're all lying to each other. I'm telling them it's fine. They know something's wrong. I'm teaching them not to trust their own instincts. Like all of it was just, so I drove to drop them off at school. And then I drove straight to this freaking yoga studio that I'd driven by a million times. Okay. And I walk into the studio and there's all the freaking incense. I'm like, I have no mat. I don't know what's happening. Just where do I go? Okay. So the nice lady sent me into this room. I sit down in this room and you all know this story. It was 490 degrees.
So it was a hot yoga class that you
didn't. Well, I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. I just thought that the air conditioning was broken. I just sat there. And thought, why does my life suck so much? Like all of this is happening to me. And then now I go to the one yoga studio that the air conditioning is broken in, right? So, but all these other women are sitting around they're sitting there in the heat. So I'm like, forget it. I'm leaving. I pick up my little rented mat and start to walk out. And then this yoga teacher walks in. So then I just sit right back down. Because
we are nothing if not pleasing of authority figures. Like, yes, okay, I was just repositioning. Yeah. Thank you.
Exactly.
Thank you so much.
I was like, fuck this. I'm out of here. Fuck this. Oh, hi. I just had to pee. I'll be right back.
Yeah. I'm looking to get an A+ in whatever that's class right. This is. Thank you.
Oh exactly. My gosh. Isn't that so true?
So I sit down. The woman says, "Welcome to hot yoga." And I'm just like, oh, what slice of fresh hell have I stepped into? She sits down on her mat. So I sit down on my mat. Everyone else is sitting on the mat. And then she says, "Let's all set our intentions for the day." Now, how normal does this sound? Now we always set intentions. We do all of these things, right, babe?
Yeah, but the first go around with somebody setting intentions, it's like, what the hell are you
I
talking
was like,
about?
What? She might as well come in with a witch hat and a cauldron. I was like, what is this sorcery that's happening here, right? So the freaking lady next to me says, I swear to both of you, on this worst day of my life, this lady goes, "My intention is to radiate loving kindness to all sentient." Is that how you say
sentient? Sentient. Isn't it sentient? I think it's sentient.
Oh my God.
I don't know.
I just beings. Have only heard you say sentient beings.
That's how it's spelled. And I usually say things how they're spelled because I only read.
So how do you spell it?
S-E-N-T-I-E-N-T.
But sish,
I wanted to stab this peaceful lady. I just felt like my intention is to make it through this class.
Yeah, she was upstaging everybody with her
freaking
intention.
She was just like,
here.
I mean, are you serious? We're just trying to get through the day. I give an intention. Mm-hmm. I say, my intention is just to make it through whatever's about to happen here over this next hour without picking up my mat and running out the door.
Very good intention.
And well, actually, I think it was a good intention because the yoga instructor looked at me like I had said something very revolutionary.
Like you were a sentient, whatever it is being?
Yes. I was one of those beings they were talking about. So she looks at me and she says, "Okay, you just sit there and stay on your mat." And I was like, okay, I can probably do that. Okay, so here's what happens. The woman starts the class. She's telling everyone to do all of these various choreographed situations. Okay. The other people know how to do the choreographed situations. I sit there on my mat for 50 minutes in the 150 degrees while everyone else does their stretches. And what happened to me was my first experience of deep, deep stillness. Okay. Because what I figured out is I was running so fast from what had just happened to me in my life. I was had been running, I think, since I actually first got sober. I think this was my first deep sobriety experience in that class. Because when I got sober 10 years before, I immediately was like, I was pregnant. I got married when I was sober for 4 minutes. I was like trying so desperately to become, I was the level one-ing. I was trying so desperately to become everything. I was trying to be a good girl. I had been a bad girl my whole life. I was trying to be a good girl.
No, but.
Well, I know that's it, what I had. Yeah. And I just decided I'm just going to push under the rug. Like I'm going to put everything, push it under the bed. All of my addiction, all of my pain, I'm just going to push it under there. I'm going to become this upstanding citizen, right? And then this thing happened in my marriage and I was so terrified of the future and I was so ashamed that this was my life and I was avoiding all of it. And then while I was sitting there for that 50 minutes, I just let it all come up. It was like every single fear, every single bit of shame, all my anger, all my memories, they just started all popping up one at a time, like one of the, like a twisted game of whack-a-mole where like all the moles are your worst, the things you think will kill you if you feel them. And I had no mallet and I was just like crying and just it all came up. And then at the end of the class, there's this thing that they do in yoga called Shavasana.
Shavasana.
Anyway, it's a nap. It's a little nap.
It's the best
part. If they just did that the whole time, everyone would do yoga.
So hold on. So your teacher just told you just to lay there.
Yes,
the whole
she was
time.
Amazing. And then she, no, I didn't lay there. I was sitting.
Oh, I see. You just sat there. Just sit there the whole time and you just didn't move.
Exactly.
She exercised her intention. Stayed true. Yeah.
I stayed on my mat and didn't run out. And I'm telling you, this yoga instructor knew something big was happening. She was looking at me with her encouraging face. Her encouraging face was like, you're doing a good job. I mean, I was bawling.
Yeah.
Like clearly she knew something was happening. Then at the end of yoga, I was in the nap, laying down, just wrung out with sweat and tears and all of the things. And that was the first experience I had with the power of doing nothing, like the power of not running, the power of staying on your mat, of not picking up your mat and running out of the room, which is what I was symbolically doing with every feeling that I had, because I felt like if I let the memories come up, if I let the pain arise, if I let it all be and looked at it, I would die. And I think that was my real first understanding of what sobriety is, which is just a not running. Because I had really kind of replaced the running with booze to the running of achievement and of identity building. And so that's when I stopped being afraid of my feelings. It was like that deep stillness of refusing to run from emotion. It didn't free me from pain. I feel pain all the time. But it freed me from being terrified of pain. I don't have to be afraid of pain anymore. I can allow it all to come up.
I've heard you tell that story so many times, and it's the first time that I have thought of the fact of stillness, like that perfect storm happening, because it was the first time that you didn't have motion in your decisions too. You know, you had when you got pregnant with Chase, okay, I'm getting married, I'm having a family, I'm doing the thing. You get the house, you have the kids, you get the family together, you're going. I'm just thinking for the first time, is part of that ability to have that stillness set in was precisely because there was no forward motion in your ability to make the decision. Because if you had been like, I'm staying no matter what, then you would have been like, insert, you know, couples therapy, insert everything we need. Like you would have project managed that. Or if you were leaving, you would have been project managing that. But the fact you were in this, you know, intractable middle space where you couldn't make a decision made you have
to. That is so interesting because first of all, I've never thought about that before, but it also is how I tend to fix problems is like rush into something else. And that is what makes me feel like progress is happening. That is a bit of a numbing too. It's like sometimes is our stuckness. It's almost a claustrophobic feeling of like, oh my God, like, there has to be, it's a suffocating, like there has to be a decision that will relieve this pain. And when there is no decision that will relieve the pain, is that perhaps an invitation to stillness? Like there's still more that needs to be healed or faced and your life won't allow you movement until you've faced that which stillness will bring up.
I think maybe that we will avoid stillness at every possible cost. And so because we will only succumb to stillness when we absolutely have to, maybe it's those places of stuckness where we kind of get that gift because if we can move left or move right versus staying still, we absolutely will. So it's those moments that you have that are horrible. I wouldn't wish them on anyone, but they are unique in that you're so desperate for any kind of shift and there is no external shift you can make. So it has to be an internal shift.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't agree more. It feels like all of us, I mean, I can just remember the times in my 20s. I've had friends who were trying to get me into meditation and do more yoga. And I'm just like, oh yeah. But deep down, I knew that that was the thing that was helping me the most. Like I knew deep down that sitting quietly for 10, 15, 20 minutes a day is going to be a thing that can help. But like, why wouldn't I do it?
I know, because like, it's the hardest thing. And so that's so an interesting point because I'm thinking when I think about the moments of stillness that have changed my life, they always are right after a massive rock bottom. Okay. So a massive rock bottom. And then there after that is the big stillness that has shifted something for me. So is it the fact that stillness is the gift of rock bottom or is stillness always there? We just only will go there when we have completely run out of any other option.
I think that's exactly when it is. I mean, I think it's the latter because of course it's available to all of us. We just only take it when it's the only thing available to us. Yeah. I mean, it's available all the time to all of us, but we will only take it when it's the only thing available to us.
Yes,
it's
like that's
praying,
right.
It's like praying to God for me. It's like praying to God at the end.
Like, yeah, you're like, I'm okay, literally God, please, out of every other option.
I will do anything. I promise I'll go to church on Sundays from now on. I'll believe in you from now on.
Right.
And then there's meditation after that.
After that. That's before. That's right.
It's because it's very hard. It's it's the simplest, hardest. Yeah. Thing. The truth is in the stillness. And who the hell wants that?
I think it's fear for me.
Of what's going to come up.
I feel like I've been afraid of my internal world self, of finding out who I am. I'm like, I'm a fraud. Like I'm an imposter. Like any second now, people are going to like catch me for not being real and true.
Totally. I always feel that way.
What is that about?
I don't know. Like,
well, let's talk about that because Glennie, you said that's the first time that you were still with your feelings, that you weren't afraid of them. What does it mean about us that we're afraid of our feelings? What is it that we are afraid of? Like, what is the thing that keeps us in motion?
Well, I don't, I mean, I have a couple thoughts in this moment. One is, as we talk about a lot, we are not taught
That's right.
How to experience uncomfortable emotions.
Yes.
Like we think if the pain, that the pain of uncomfortable emotions ends in death. Like we do not understand that so we can funny. Feel rage and anger and sadness and heartbreak and that it will go through us and pass. Because I think we just live in a culture that is so obsessed with happiness.
Sadness is not marketable.
Right.
Yeah. It's just not. It's not like, you know, sad Christmas.
Right.
Sad
right.
holidays. It's like happy everything. Everything is fucking happy.
That's right.
Happy Christmas. Happy holidays. Happy New Year.
Yeah.
We should change it.
And then I think.
Medium New Year.
Medium. Mediocre. Have a mediocre New Year.
Mediocre day.
Well, happy-ish. I've always liked happy-ish. Happy-ish ever after. And then maybe there's something that our feelings will make us do. Mm. There are conversations that I need to have that when I feel my anger kind of remind me that I have to have that conversation. Mm. Or like resentments where I feel like, oh, that's right. Like you still are in that friendship that you, that is not good for you. In the stillness, your feelings kind of guide you toward hard
truth,
hard decisions. Mm-hmm.
They guide you towards truth.
Yeah. And those truthy things are decisive, hard things that are
That's right.
disturbing to your life.
When I was traveling internationally for soccer, I didn't have time to come up with all sorts of travel itineraries when all I could think about were the matches we needed to focus on. But it was important to me that I saw the world while I was abroad. Viator can help with that in a big way. Everything from nature walks to guided history tours or adventure sports, all of it can be booked through Viator. Viator's a tool you can use to plan and book over 300,000 travel experiences around the world, no matter who you're with or where you're going. We've used Viator for family trips, and things like real reviews from fellow travelers really helped inform our decisions for which experiences to book. And because plans can easily change for a whole host of reasons, it was nice to know that free cancellation was available. So if you want to explore the globe or even your neighborhood in a new way, download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find the perfect travel experience for you. Do more with Viator.
I also wanted to talk about this second version of stillness, because I would say the first version for me is a stillness with feelings. Okay. It's a stillness that allows emotions to exist and live and be acknowledged and be released in one way or another.
Okay. To feel the energy of motion.
Yeah. It's like what, emotion, right. Energy and motion. Like it's energy and motion. So it can't be completely stagnated. We can't ignore it. It has to be released in one way or another. I mean, that's mm-hmm. what we teach our kids. It's okay to feel this thing. How do you feel? Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of adults that get to the point where that they don't know
yeah.
how to feel their feelings mm-hmm. and how to sit with it. And so that was a big epiphany for me. But there was this second experience that I had with stillness that taught me something completely different. Okay. So this was a teacher, a time when stillness was a teacher again for me, but it taught me something completely different. Okay. So sometime later, when I was still in this like shitstorm of what am I going to do? We'd already been through, this is my first marriage. We'd already been through tons and tons of therapy. I could not find peace to save my life. I could not find peace about going. I could not find peace about staying. I did not know what I wanted to do. I did not know what I wanted to do. I would go back and forth every single day, argue with myself. One night I find myself sitting on the bed, just shoveling Ben and Jerry's into my mouth and Googling, okay, what do I do if my husband is a cheater, but also a really good dad? Enter. Okay. So I was Googling my one wild and precious life. Okay. I was, I was asking a bunch of bots and trolls if they knew what I should do.
I love this.
With my life.
Bots and trolls.
Yeah. And I mean, I had, that was looking at that question in the Google search bar, you know, was like a wake up call to me. It was like, oh my God, when did you start trusting literally everyone else on earth more than yourself?
Wow.
Right? Like, and up to that moment, you guys, I had been calling friends, asking them what I should do, what would they do, reading every single article that anyone has ever written about infidelity and broken up families and yada, yada, yada. I had taken freaking BuzzFeed quizzes, you know, those quizzes that 16-year-olds make in their parents' basement. I was getting advice from those.
I
love those.
I'm like, who am I? I will like, what never, am I gonna be?
I will always take all the quizzes.
I love them.
But I realized looking at that, the computer that night, I have one life. And I am never going to live my one life if I don't figure out what I want to do. If I don't keep desperately searching outside of myself for somebody to tell me mm-hmm. what to do. If I don't quit living my life by inquiry and consensus and permission. So that is the kind of moment, that rock bottom, that kind of like advice rock bottom, I guess lack of self-trust rock bottom, desperate searching for approval rock bottom is when I committed myself to stillness again. It's when I decided, that's when I started to sit in my closet for 7 minutes at a time to try to like, you know, I just kept feeling like every day I'm waking up and asking the world what I should do. If you want to do that, it's easy to do because the exterior voices in our lives are so freaking loud.
Yeah.
Here's your next audiobook. Here's your next TV show. Here's your next expert. Here's your next, you know, minister, teacher, whatever. There's all these voices on the outside of ourselves that it drowns out this kind of knowing that we all have inside of ourselves. And that was a weird return to stillness. It was just like this desperation for some kind of wisdom.
So you were going in the closet for 7 minutes and doing a kind of meditation. Like, how did you learn about this meditation? Or you were just sitting there quietly? Because I kind of think that that's my favorite definition of meditation.
I didn't
just
have
sit
any,
quietly.
Yeah, I didn't have any like special technique or anything back then. I just was committed to quiet. You know, stillness had already taught me something, and I kind of instinctively knew that that was the place to return to when I was lost. And instinctively knew that there was something to be found there that I would never find in all of my desperate searching outside of it. So that time is when I found this inner, it's not a voice, it's just what I call the knowing. It's intuition, it's spirit, it's whatever, you know, you call it gut, Abby, right? Like, it's this inner guide that always knows what I need to do next. It never tells me like the 5-year plan, but it always guides me towards the next right thing. And then when you commit to the next right thing, it gives you the next thing. And then it's like becomes a yellow brick road, right? Where you can find your entire way home, just one thing at a time. So do you experience that knowing or that intuition? How do you experience the knowing? And do you find it in stillness?
Well, intuition, first of all, everyone experiences it. It's not just if you believe in the woo-woo. I mean, it's a real thing. Like intuition is the ability to know something without analytical reasoning. It bridges the gap between conscious and non-conscious parts of our mind. So we both, whether you believe in the woo-woo knowing or not, it is a thing that's happening. The science shows that intuition operates through the entire right side of the brain and through our gut. That's why it's called gut instinct. So the enteric nervous system is located in your gastrointestinal tract, and it's full of neurons that convey information just like the brain does. So you are having, whether you acknowledge it or not, your body is sending signals through your gut and through the right side of your brain. So I just feel like whether you believe in it or not, it's there. But I think I really resonated with what you said before about kind of coming from the most desperate moments where we literally have nothing else that we can turn to, that are the kind of some of the best practice zones for that. And I think it is for me, when things were miserable enough that I was desperate enough to try to figure out whether there was any kind of something better, a better idea, or a better way to feel. That happened right after my divorce. And I think that wrecked me so much in my view of how the world worked that I wasn't willing to rely on how the world was working anymore. And that how it kind of, in that darkness, I started looking for any kind of light, for anything that made me feel alive. I didn't know what I wanted, or I didn't know what a plan would be. I didn't even know how to trust what I wanted because of what I'd just been through. Ashley Ford's new book, Somebody's Daughter, which is so amazing. In her book, she has this incredible story of this moment in her life. And she says, inside of myself, I let go. For half a minute, I was flying. For half a minute, I knew I had it in me to tell the truth and be loved anyway. And for me, that's what inner knowing feels like what joy and freedom and anything that makes me feel alive. It just always shows up just about for a half a minute. It's never sustained, and it's not a static place of arrival. It's sadly and tragically, it's just for kind of half a minute of believing and half a minute of seeing another way for yourself. And at that time in my life, I was so desperate for anything that made me feel a little more alive that I just started to take a chance that I could go towards that and eventually feel more alive. That, to me, is how we know that something is for us, how we know that something is of our knowing and our choosing, is that we can practice learning what our intuition is by running toward anything that feels like a half a minute of being alive. And I think anything that feels like freedom to you is what you can trust.
That's good.
Pod Squad, we know about you. You, like us, pamper your pups with clothes, fluffy beds, toys all the days, any little thing their goodest hearts desires. Why then would we settle for burnt, smelly pellets in their dog dishes? Maybe you don't. Maybe you go with the farmer's dog like I do for Seamus, and you reap the benefits of giving your dog real, fresh, healthy food. It looks like real food because it is real food. It's made with human-grade kitchens with the same gentle cooking you'd use if you were preparing meals for your family. It's even fun signing up. You answer questions about your dog, like what health issues they might have, how old they are, what breed and personality they have, and more. You're not only getting fresh, pre-portioned food, you're getting fresh, pre-portioned food for your specific dog. And your dog may just have a newfound respect for their human too. Get 50% off your first box of fresh, healthy food at www.thefarmersdog.com/hardthings. Food made in human-grade kitchens with the same gentle cooking you'd use if you were preparing meals for your family. Maybe more. Get 50% off your first box of fresh, healthy food at www.thefarmersdog.com/hardthings.
I just have one question for you about that. The 30 seconds of freedom, when you experience that feeling and then everything goes back to shit, normal, mundane life.
Always and inevitably.
Right. Exactly. So are you able to tap, because the feeling isn't enough, right? Like, are you able to tap back into the feeling, remember the feeling, and make decisions in your mundane life based on what that flash of freedom taught you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think in a day, in a month, in a year that is in that claustrophobic, intractable middle place, like you were just talking about, for those two times where, you know, you couldn't go left or right and the internet wasn't even telling you what to do. And there's nothing that I think those 30 seconds at a time that are these kind of like raindrops in a desert. It's not mm-hmm. going to fill you up. It's not going to take your thirst away, but it's enough to remind you that mm-hmm. water exists, right?
Yes.
It's enough to show you it isn't always going to be exactly like this and there is a better place for you, but it's not here and it's not right now. So mm-hmm. you have to mm-hmm. rush toward wherever, whatever looks like and feels like that freedom, because mm-hmm. that's going to take you closer to the place that is not right now.
Yeah. Yes. That's good. All right, y'all. For the next right thing today, I think we just find a minute of stillness.
Oof. 1 minute.
Right?
I mean, if you
can
feel,
we do a minute?
If you're feeling like kind of hardcore, like get to two.
No, we're not going to do two. We can do hard things. We can't do impossible things. 1 minute of stillness, Pod Squad, and see what comes up. We love you. Next episode, I'm going to talk about some new stillness that is kind of rocking my world these days.
Ooh, can't wait.
Things get hard this week. Don't forget. What are we not going to forget, Love Bug?
We are not going to forget that we can do
hard things. See you soon.
Bye.
I give you Tish Melton and Brandi Carlile.
I walked through fire. I came out the other side. I chased desire. I made sure I got what's mine. And I continue to believe that I'm the one for me. And because I'm mine, I walk the line. 'Cause we're adventurers and heartbreaks on map, a final destination. Find our way back home and through heart.
Things is produced in partnership with Cadence 13 Studios. Be sure to rate, review, and follow the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Odyssey, or wherever you get your podcasts. Especially be sure to rate and review the podcast if you really liked it. If you didn't, don't worry about it. It's fine.
I am an outdoors person. I'm a big fan of places that are rich in culture, history, and art. And most importantly, I'm a former resident of the great state of Oregon, which is why I want to tell you about Travel Oregon. When you find a guide through Travel Oregon, you'll be able to leave the planning to the local guides and experts, and this is a game changer. Instead of trying to find a good hiking trail and hope for the best, you can get a tour guide to bring you to the must-see spots, ensure you're provided with all the necessary safety gear, and show you all the amazing little nuggets you might miss on your own. And because the guides and tour companies are small businesses, they're led by incredibly passionate people. You can find experts who speak multiple languages and know about a variety of cuisines. Or if you want a biking tour, you can find local guides to help you to customize your tour. There's so much to explore. Learn more at traveloregon.com.